This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. When does something cool become creepy? Not two words normally associated with insurance or even financial services. But today we have with us the group president and CEO of Sun Life, one of Canada's largest financial groups, Dean Connor, in the studio to tell us why this is one of his favourite phrases. Welcome to Malaysia and, of course, BFM. Now, Dean, Sun Life has four main pillars: Canadian group and individual life, US business, Asian business, and asset management. So let's start with Canadian group and individual life. Still the largest contributor to net income at 33%. But in Canada, Manulife is bigger. Now, is there a game plan to shake things up and increase your 18% market share versus their market share of 33%?
Well, first of all, in Canada, we're in a number of businesses. Group benefits, which is employee benefits in the work site, we're number one in that market. Group retirement, we're number one in that market with over $100 billion of client assets under management. In individual life insurance, we're number one or number two. We're ahead of Manulife in that market. So we're actually number one or number two in most of the businesses in which we operate. Canada, on the one hand, is a slower growth market, country of 37 million people. On the other hand, there's still a lot of Canadians who don't have the insurance coverage they need. So there are opportunities to help people save more for retirement and to cover themselves and their loved ones. So still a lot of opportunity to grow.
The issue about in more developed markets, or like you say in Canada with 37 million population, is that there's this aging population. So is there a challenge for life insurers like y'all in finding out new young enrollees? I mean, to kind of offset the higher cost from the rising number of like death benefit claims, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's interesting. When we look at millennials, and they are fast becoming the biggest part of the workforce, they are just as interested in protecting themselves, their families, their loved ones, as their parents were. And so as they come along, and there's a large group of them, they're keen to engage with us, to buy the kind of protection they need, to save for retirement. And at the older end of the spectrum, there's a really interesting thing going on. First of all, governments are realizing they can't afford all the healthcare promises that have been made. So they're pushing more of that responsibility down on the shoulders of citizens. So there's an opportunity for us to help fill that gap. And second, people have saved up for retirement, but what do you do once you're 65, you need a lifetime income? How do you take a pot full of savings and convert it into a lifetime income? So those are great opportunities for Sun Life and for the industry.
Now, what about the legacy underperforming businesses? Because that's something that a lot of insurance companies are faced with today.
Well, in our case, we don't view them as underperforming. We actually love our legacy businesses. We've sold insurance for, you know, over 150 years. And so we have, we don't have any policyholders 150 years old, but we have some who are 100 years old. And so those are good products sold and they're profitable and we love that business. The challenge in insurance, of course, is as those products mature, we have to replace them and we have to create growth. You have to replace the business that's rolling off and grow with new sales. And we've been doing that.
So there's this shift towards more investment type of products?
Yeah, I think you see that around the world, more investment products. One of the challenges in life insurance, if you sell a long-term product that has big guarantees in it in a low interest rate environment, it's very hard to make the economics work. And as interest rates have fallen over the last 30 years, it's made it more and more challenging for insurance companies who priced those products years ago at higher interest rates.
Okay, and let's talk about data. I mean, a lot of your initiatives in terms of customer involved data. But like you say, when does cool become creepy? Because if there's something insurance companies have a lot of, is data. So how can we trust you corporate guys? I mean, if anybody's example is Facebook, right? So how do we know you're doing it for the good of the customer? Because at the end of the day, you're a listed company. Isn't the mantra maximizing shareholder value?
Well, I'd like to come back to that point, but let me talk about the data piece of it first. You know, 150 years ago when these insurance companies like Sun Life started, the way we talked about brand and what was important to clients at that time was, will you be here in 50 years to pay my claim? And the way we expressed that brand was we built these beautiful buildings made of granite and marble, said, yes, we will be here like 150 years from now. Today, I think brand is increasingly about data. What are you doing with my data? Are you using it for me? Or are you using it against me?
Yeah, which is like, how do I know that the data you have on me is not going to be used to deny me a policy or work against me?
So what in our case, we are publishing a data charter, which is our set of promises to our clients. And that'll be coming out in the next month or so. Included in that will be things like Sun Life will not sell your data, period.
I thought that would be a given though.
Well, lots of companies sell data. It's part of their business model. And we are going to say Sun Life will not sell your data. In terms of how we use your data, everything we use it for, we ask you for your permission. We're working hard to simplify those permissions. You know, the
jargon.
The jargon, the 10,000 words where you scroll down and just hit accept because you just want to get on. We're trying to find a way to simplify that to make it really clear to people how we're using their data. Now, we don't use people's data to deny them coverage. If somebody goes through underwriting and tells us, here's my medical history, then we sometimes use that, but they've shared that with us. We haven't, you know, kind of gotten it behind your back. It was a proper disclosure. They know exactly what they shared, and we use that.
But who governs you, though, in terms of your use of data? Is there any regulatory body?
Currently, no. In Canada, I should correct that. There are laws everywhere we operate. In Canada, it's called PIPEDA. In Europe, it's GDPR. US has all kinds of laws around that. And here in Asia, we have laws by country. What we're doing in Sun Life is we're saying we have to define what it means to treat a client's data fairly ahead of the regulator. Because if the regulator tells us what to do, what it means to treat a client fairly,
it's too late.
We failed.
Yeah.
We have failed. So our goal is to be ahead of the regulator. What does it make? If we're sitting here with our brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, and explaining how we're using their data, it has to make sense.
And I did notice some unusual data partnerships. And even what's more interesting is your investment in fintech businesses. You spent about $100 million Canadian in startups, right? Is that how you're actually preparing yourselves for, let's face it, the eventual disruption to the insurance industry? Is that enough?
That's one of the ways. Importantly, in addition to that, we have seeded a number of experiments, I'd call them, within the company. So they're not outside fintechs, they're within the company, where we take a team of people out of their regular day operations, might be 30 people, with some data scientists and internal fintech people. And we're building new models, new businesses inside Sun Life. To see what can happen and try to stand them up and make them successful. So we've got these outside investments that you talked about. We have incubating these things internal to the company. Some of them are very promising. Some of them haven't worked, so we shut them down. So that's the nature of experimentation.
Yeah, so you do see disruptors as a real challenge then. The InsurTech, is that a real challenge? Especially when I look at the still existing complexity of traditional insurance companies and the policies, right? So you have these InsurTech guys who are moving away from that. They're just selling products that only perhaps you need, not wrapped with other products. Yeah.
You know, it's very interesting. If you had asked me that question 2 years ago, and I think most CEOs would have been very concerned about all these fintech upstarts. Today, it feels like a different proposition. It feels like the value of incumbency, of being in the business with a lot of existing clients, is very valuable. What we've observed is that a lot of these fintech startups, really smart people, clever idea, unfortunately, a number of them are going to run out of cash long before they get enough clients to make a viable business. And what we're doing is partnering with them. In some cases, you know, Maxwell Health's a good example, partnered with them, took a small ownership stake, ended up buying them because they weren't going to be viable as a standalone. And I think you're going to see that across a number of small fintechs.
But it, like, if we bring it, this discussion a little bit back to Asia, what I think is the real disruptors is the likes of non-traditional finance companies like Alibaba and Tencent offering, let's say, health insurance. Yeah. And they have data, they have reach. So yeah. How do you compete with people like them?
Yeah, so I think that those are actually the bigger challengers, I think, to the insurance industry. It's Google, it's Facebook, it's Amazon, it's Baidu, it's Tencent. It's these guys who have gigantic pools of data and good brand presence.
And the money.
And the money. And so the way we're competing with the likes of those guys is trying to build out our own data-driven models so that we can be there proactively, predictively with clients. Because what we've discovered is people will do a lot of research on the internet, on mobile. Buying more complicated insurance products, you want to talk to somebody.
You still need a financial advisor.
You still need an advisor. You still, because it's a big decision, you know, and you're trying to do the right thing for a long time and you want to make sure you're thinking about all the right things.
And let's have a look at the US business. 16% of profit, but would you say this is your most challenging market? Because I do see relatively volatile earnings over the last few years, right? So what's the plan there? Are you planning to exit this market? Or is it still a core business?
Oh, it's a core business. And in fact, I think it's a great growth engine for us. The group benefits market, we are a key player in that, providing insurance through the worksite. And big opportunity to increase voluntary coverages. You know, every time somebody, for example, somebody dies among the groups, the employers, employees that we cover, and if they died and they should have had insurance and we somehow failed to sign them up, we didn't persuade them they should have had the coverage, we failed. Every time that happens, we failed. And, you know, when our clients offer voluntary life insurance in the worksite, only 30, 40% of people take it. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot of opportunity to close that coverage gap, and it's an inexpensive product, and you can, you know, pay for it off your payroll deduction. And so we see a lot of runway to grow that business in the US.
You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm speaking to Dean Corner, President and CEO of Sun Life Financial. After we come back, we are going to look at their Asian business and ask if that is the main engine of growth while dissecting the asset management pillar, an industry which has seen significant challenges. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to the Breakfast Grill, where I'm speaking to Dean Corner, President and CEO of Sun Life Financial. Earlier, we were talking about the company's response to the rise of big data and the insurance industry in North America. Now, Dean, let's take a look at the asset management business first. A significant pillar in Sun Life, third quarter results show net income contribution of 30%. You see fund inflows of as much as $3.2 billion, when some of your peers like State Street, BNY Mellon, and even your bestie, Manulife, saw outflows. So why have you bucked the trend?
Well, our asset management businesses are organized in two areas, Xiaoning. One is MFS, Massachusetts Financial Services, based in Boston, global investment management firm, around $500 billion US of assets under management. It actually invented the first mutual fund in 1924, the Massachusetts Investors Trust. It was the first mutual fund. Anyway, great, great history. This team of investment professionals has something very special in terms of teamwork, in terms of the way they go at portfolio construction, security selection, the way we reward people, pay people. It's very distinctive. And those features have led MFS to outperform the market net of fees. And what's happening in U.S. retail, investing in particular, is there has been a movement from active management to passive. But it's not 100%. And the money that remains inactive, so there's still a big pool of alpha-believing, alpha-seeking assets, but they're being concentrated in the hands of fewer active managers where there's high conviction around their ability to keep adding alpha. And MFS is one of those managers.
But there's no denying, right, that there is this shift from active to passive fund management. And with that, also, there's been pressure on fees on both ends, whether it's active and passive. So how are you actually adapting? Because, I mean, if I look at some of the data out there, Moody's, for example, they predict that the split between active and passive funds in the US will reach parity by 2021. And currently, your active portfolio is 90% versus passive, which is at 10%. Won't you be ultimately be affected?
Yeah, I think certainly there is fee pressure. As you say, the shift from active to passive, and even within active, there's fee pressure. MFS has been able to offset a lot of that through changes in product mix. The investment, the international and global investment solutions have had very strong performance results, like very strong returns. Those solutions have higher fees than just, for example, U.S. equity products. The fees in the retail channel have higher than the fees in the institutional channel. So it's interesting, the combination of mix by channel and by product has actually allowed MFS to keep its margin relatively flat. Now, having said that, there's only so much of that you can do over time, and there is downward fee pressure. And what we think will happen is that'll be offset somewhat by growth in assets under management. And it's a scale business, as you know, given your background. So it's just to be clear, our view is that MFS will grow, 4%, 5%, 6% a year in terms of net income. It's not the double-digit growth we're expecting elsewhere.
But what about the recent move by discount brokers like Charles Schwab? I mean, they're offering 0% brokerage on ETFs, which may compete with the retail side of your business because people think, hey, 0%, this is a good deal, right? Why should I put my money with an asset manager then?
You know, I think there's still a lot of Americans in particular who go to an advisor. And what those advisors have done is put some of their clients' assets in passive, but not all. And, you know, one of the things that we think is going to happen the next time there's a big market downturn, we think there are going to be a lot of clients who are surprised at how much beta they own. That if the S&P 500 goes down by 15% and their funds go down by 15%, and we think MFS mutual funds will go down by less through active management and careful portfolio construction. Certainly, that's been the history in the past. We think there's going to be a swing back. Not a huge, it's not going to completely reverse back, but we think there'll be a lot of clients who will be surprised that they have so much market beta.
So do you expect an economic downturn then or market correction? From the sounds of it,
there will be one.
Everything moves in cycles, right?
Everything moves in cycles. There will be one. I just can't tell you when.
Okay. And generating those returns that client expects, since we're talking about markets, it definitely has become more challenging, right? We are in volatile markets, whether it's equity or fixed income. And if we look at fixed income, the low bond yields or even negative bond yields in some markets, it's as negative bond yields as much as 1/4 of all issuances. Are you at risk of not meeting clients' expectations then?
Well, two things. One is client expectations have been coming down appropriately. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago that the average pension fund was expecting their mix of 60% equities, 40% fixed income would yield 8-9%. Those expectations have come way down. Think of 5%, 6%. The flip side of all that is come back to what our clients need. Our clients need returns. They need alpha. And I'm back to the active versus passive. If inflation is so low and returns are so low, if you can eke out another 30, 40, 50 basis points of alpha net of fees, that's worth its weight in gold in a low return world. That makes a huge difference. It's more important today than it was when yields were way higher.
And let's look at the insurance side of the business, the investment aspects of it. Now, does this ultra low rate environment or even like flat interest rate environment then make it difficult for you to duration match your asset and liabilities? Because that's critical in insurance, right?
It is. And you know, the reality is when we sell a life insurance policy to a 30-year-old and it's, you know, we expect that to be on the books for 50, 60 years, and we can't find anything to invest in that long, 30 years, maybe 35 years. And so we've got a big duration that's unmatched. We just can't match it. So as rates have come down, that's been a challenge for the insurance industry. In the case of Sun Life, the way we've managed that is if you look at our mix of business, only 20% of our net income comes from products that are in that long, long tail category. Mm-hmm. 40% comes from insurance products that are shorter term duration, like group life insurance, and 40% comes from wealth and asset management, which if anything, as rates have come down, it's inflated asset values and it has generated fee growth. So that 20-40-40 mix has been a source of real advantage for us.
Now, Dean, let's look at the Malaysian business. What opportunities do you see here?
As we look forward, we see several opportunities. One is to continue to build out our relationship with CIMB, who've been a terrific partner, bank partner, both conventional and Takaful. Second, we're building out agency. And, you know, we just started that a year or so ago and off to a very good start. And we think agency, we need to be involved with and building high quality agency in all of the markets in which we operate. And that's an area where we're well behind our competitors here in Malaysia. And that's an opportunity, actually, for us to build that out. And thirdly, we have investments in digital and fintech, new sources of distribution, new ways to distribute, including one with U-Mobile that has produced some really fascinating results. So, you know, I'd put that under the heading of experimenting and trying new things to improve penetration and coverage. So we think the combination of those three things should continue to drive good organic growth for us.
And in Malaysia, you're actually a JV partner. The local JV partner is Khazanah, right?
Yeah.
Which has a 49% stake. There's a change in strategy on the Khazanah side, and they have disposed of key assets. Is Sun Life on that disposal list, or is that JV very strong?
The JV is very strong. By the way, Khazanah has been a very strong partner. We have a lot of respect for the people at Khazanah. They're smart investors. They're long-term investors. As they've reset their strategy for the future, it's clear in our discussions with them that they like the insurance business. They like the fact that it does social good, but it is also a growth area and it generates cash flow, which is important to Khazanah. So the joint venture continues to be strong and continues to tick all the boxes that they're interested in.
And Dean, you know, in all your materials, you clearly state that your ROE, your return on equity targets are 12 to 14%. You're looking at EPS growth of between 8 to 10%. You've come very far. The question is, can you sustain this momentum, especially what we would say in this late cycle of the economy?
Yeah, those are the medium-term objectives we've put out to investors over the next 3, 4, 5 years. And we have delivered on those as you look backwards. And as we look forward, we think we have all the ingredients to keep delivering on those objectives. You look at
But
Asia,
what will keep you awake at night?
Well, obviously, a big economic crisis. And you can't predict the severity or the timing of those. I would say to you that I think this mix of businesses, the 20-40-40, the strength of our balance sheet, I think we think we're in good shape, both from a defense, but also a potential offensive standpoint.
So something you're going to acquire, M&A then?
Well, there's different things you can do when markets hit challenging spots. You can look at M&A, although what I've discovered is usually when the bottom falls out of the markets, nothing's for sale. Nobody wants to sell anything. But you can also invest in assets. So, you know, we've got about 3 billion ringgit of assets invested here, supporting our business here in Malaysia. And there's different things we can invest in. And what we discovered in the global financial crisis is the investment opportunity. If you've got some dry powder on your balance sheet, you can pick up assets at fantastic values.
On that note, thank you for your time, Dean. It's been a most interesting discussion on one of the largest Canadian insurance companies with plans for Asian domination. I'm Wong Shaoling for The Morning Run, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.